to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Welcome back to the political cesspool. It's Saturday, December 12th, a very, very cold Saturday, December 12th here in Memphis, Tennessee, as we broadcast to you live from AM 1380 WLRM Radio. And, of course, we're going out over the Internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org, our official headquarters on the web, thepoliticalcesspool.org, and libertynewsradio.com, Liberty News Radio Network, and their AM-FM affiliate stations across the country. A good first hour tonight with Keith Alexander, as it always is when Keith is sitting in here with me. Now joining me, Winston Smith. We go from, well, I was going to say we go from good to better, but it's just really a maintenance of it all. It's great to great. Winston, how are you?
I'm very well, James. I'm glad to be back at the helm of the, or at the co-helm of the CSS Political Cesspool. It's always my pleasure to be on the air with you.
We were going to have a it's my pleasure as well, Winston, it goes without saying. We were going to have a tri-captaincy here for the CSS Cesspool during the second and third hour, but as you know, Eddie the Bombardier Miller just walked into the studio, saw Winston was here, and said, well, he was excited to see Winston, of course, and Winston, he wanted me to tell you he loves you, but after he heard Winston was going to be on, he said he's got a hunting trip in the morning, and if it wouldn't be an affront to me, he was going to go home and pack his gear. And that, in the mix of about 50, 60, 70 cuss words in about a three-minute span, am I lying, Denny? Yeah, an animated Eddie the Bombardier Miller tonight. He's going hunting. As Keith said last week, Eddie hadn't been on the show as much as he normally is because he's been going on safari in the Mississippi River bottoms. Well, tomorrow he's going to Alabama to go hunting, and I hope he kills him some big stuff, some big game, and brings it back. But he was excited to know he could go home and pack, and it wouldn't leave me shorthanded. So, Winston, once again, you are more than pulling your weight. You're pulling old Dr. Pappy's weight as well. But we love the Bombardier, and we want him to have a good hunt, because after they close down hunting season, he's going to have to be back in here with us.
If there ever was a sportsman and a hunter, it's Eddie the Bombardier Miller. And folks, I'm so sorry for you that you don't get to know Eddie the way that we do. We'll go out for lunch or supper sometime, and Eddie will regale us with the most amazing stories of his exploits, starting from when he was a boy, and he decided he was going to hike to Alaska, and he's like 12 years old.
Yeah,
and he got as far as, remember how far he got? He got somewhere in Missouri.
He made it to Missouri on foot before the cops found him and made him go back home. But Tom Sawyer and Huckleberry Finn have nothing on the Bombardier. He is as real as it gets. And I tell you, between Eddie and you, Winston, and Keith and Bill Rowland, I surround myself with the absolute finest people in the world. And it's just amazing that we all share the same political philosophies and that we work so well together that we can host the show that has stood the test of time. And now here we are 5 years in, and we've known each other for just about that entire duration. And we're still working together. So it's a great camaraderie. And as you said, we get the pleasure of fellowshipping with each other off the air, whereas everyone else just mainly gets to hear us on the air. And I think they can catch a glimpse into what it's like, but they'll never really know unless they know. And as you said, Winston, it would be a great blessing if everyone could know Eddie the way we do. Great man, great man.
Well, what they hear on the radio is what they would get in person. We are exactly the way we are on the radio as we are in person.
Sans a few cuss words from the Bombardier, of course, but Eddie, oh man, what he says in private isn't made for commercial radio, but nevertheless, I guess that goes for all of us, but nevertheless, but you know, who doesn't? We got a good show tonight. It's already been a good show. We are going to, as you know, Winston, and I know you're excited about this, we're opening up the phone lines here for the rest of the show. So for the last 2 hours, we promised it last month. Now we're fulfilling that promise. We like to be men of our words here. We're opening up the phone line. So give us a call. 1-866-986-NEWS. 1-866-986-NEWS. We are going to sink or swim based upon whether or not you call in, ladies and gentlemen. So please don't let us drown. 1-866-986-NEWS. Winston, you want to go to the phones early or what?
Well, if you don't mind, James, I received an email that I'd like to answer on the air.
All right, we'll let you answer that email, and then we'll go to New York with our first caller. And in the meantime, let's go ahead and start lining up the queue, ladies and gentlemen. 1-866-986-NEWS. Winston, by all means, let's talk.
All right, this is an email I received from a gentleman named Kevin, and he lives in Alabama. He writes this: "Greetings, brother. I am a white Reformed Christian, and for those of you who may not know, Reformed means a Calvinist. He says, I'm a white Reformed Christian and live in Alabama. I love your The Political Cesspool. I have recently been introduced to Kenism. I want to ask you a question about groups that are Kenist. Are there any groups that I can join, or are there any pro-Kenist? Also, are there any churches in Alabama that promote a Kenist philosophy? One other thing is, do most Kenists hold some Christian identity views as well, and do you? Thanks for your time. Hope to hear back from you soon." All right. There are a couple of questions here that I'm going to deal with. And first of all, for those of you who may not know what Kenism is, I will tell you now, I am a Kenist. Kenism is, it's hard to say what it is. We don't want to say it's a philosophy, because it's something that we believe every race holds to instinctively. Kenism is a love for one's kin, a love for one's people. We believe that that society is not based on an empire. It's not based on governments. It's based upon extended tribes. It's based upon blood kinship. That's what the word patriot means. It means of the fathers. And when you speak of the fathers, you think of your blood kin. So that's a very basic definition of kinism. If you want to know more, and Kevin, this is for you and everybody else, if you want to know more about kinism, you can go to a couple of websites. One is spiritwaterblood.com. It's all one word, spiritwaterblood.com. And you can also go to kinism.net, K-I-N-I-S-M, kinism.net. As far as groups that are kinist, there really aren't any groups that are explicitly kinist and define their group by being kinist. Neither are there any churches who have organized upon kinism, none that I know of anyhow. And I wonder sometimes if we do that intentionally. You know, we don't have an organization. Nobody can point to a headquarters or a city and say, that's the Kenist headquarters. It just doesn't exist. We don't think we need that. Kenism is something that you already possess, and it's something that you just need to nurture. You need to nurture the love of your own people. Love your race. That's what we're talking about. Of course, every other race practices kinism in some form, but it's pretty much denied to white people. And that's what we in the kinist movement are all about. We are all about encouraging white people, the peoples of European descent, to love your own race. There's nothing wrong with it. Every other race does it, and we should too. There are many benefits to it. And that's why whenever a white person or a white group appears to be kinist or nationalistic or patriarchal, they're immediately pounced upon as being racist, because they know that that loving your own people is a definite advantage. It's a benefit, and they don't want us to have that. All right. The other thing he writes do most kinists hold some Christian identity views as well? And do you? I think the majority of kinists do not hold to Christian identity. And that in itself is a tricky question to answer, because the definition of Christian identity will vary mightily depend upon who you ask. But I don't think most kinists hold to Christian identity. As far as me, I would say that I do hold to some aspects of Christian identity. But frankly, I'm still working my way through some of the claims of Christian identity, and I just don't know enough about it to say, yes, I am CI. They have some very interesting claims, and the people who do hold to Christian identity, they are very good at backing up their claims. And it would behoove everybody to investigate it a bit, and it would behoove all white people. There are some very interesting aspects and very persuasive aspects to it. So You know, I don't know if you could call me Christian Identity or not, but you can definitely call me Kenneth.
Well, Winston,
so, there you go.
I don't think you could have answered that any more thoroughly or any more appropriately and still make it in before the commercial break. Great answer and great question. Thank you so much for writing us from Alabama. And we're going to take a break. And when we kind of come back, it's all you, ladies and gentlemen. It's open mic night. Any issue you want to talk about, any political subject, topic, whatever, it's your show from here on out. Now, we've got some stuff we'll talk about if you don't want to call, but we want to hear from you. We'll be right back.
Don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood.
Please don't understand me, baby.
Don't let me be misunderstood.
Don't misunderstand me, baby.
Don't let me be
misunderstood. Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And with that, the phone lines are now officially open. For real, I promise. 1-866-986-NEWS. And let's go to New York with the gentleman who's been waiting patiently since the first hour. Dwayne, you are on the air.
Hey, James. Keith and Winston were phenomenal tonight.
Well, they always are. Winston's still here. I'm sure Keith will appreciate your comment, though.
Okay, I would just like to add to what Winston said about Christian Identity. The basic premise behind that is that the Europeans, the white Europeans, are descendants of the 12 tribes of Israel. And yes, Winston was right that they do back up their theology with tons of history and archaeology.
That is correct. When I first started investigating Christian Identity, I was amazed at the depth of the research and the implications that were drawn. It was very fascinating. Still is.
Yeah. What else did you have, Dwayne?
Oh, one other quick thing. Tonight we were on the topic of Tiger Woods, and there was a while back another great man, one of the greatest men who ever lived, who had similar issues. Do you remember last year the man who always plays God in the movies? What is his name, by the way?
Morgan Freeman.
That is his name. Do you remember he crashed his car with a white woman in the car?
That's exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, it was in Mississippi, no less, and it wasn't his wife. Yeah, but I see where you're going.
And his black wife immediately divorced him and took half his money.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not uncommon at all. Not uncommon at all for these black athletes or movie stars to run to the nearest blonde. And in fact, I believe that's a quote that I got myself from the blog from one of these black commentators. I mean, it's just that's the way it is. And that's the way, you know, odds are that that's who they're going to want to be with romantically. And you can't blame them for that.
I can't blame them either. You're 100% right.
So, but yeah, that's right. Even God likes white women when it comes time to Morgan Freeman.
You know, James, we're all just, I don't know about you, but me and some of my Kenneth friends, we are just waiting for Heidi Klum, the supermodel. She's married to that Negro singer named Seal. And
oh, yeah.
We're just waiting for the same thing to happen to her. That's the way these black celebrities tend to operate. They'll use up a white woman until they find something fresh again, and they'll ditch her, and they'll be off to fresher grounds.
Oh, Winston, on that topic?
Yeah, go ahead, Dwayne.
Winston, on the topic of Heidi Klum, who you just mentioned, they have the most gruesome-looking half-breed children I've ever seen.
Yeah, they do look pretty freakish.
Yes, that's a sin.
And you know, it's the kids who suffer from these things, from miscegenated marriages. That's the real cruelty of miscegenation. The children who are born into these miscegenated marriages, they fit in nowhere. They don't know where their loyalty is, and when it comes to demanding loyalty from them, their loyalty has to be extracted pretty much by force.
Well, of course, they'll be told that they are citizens of the world and we're all interchangeable parts and one culture is just as good or greater than, you know, everything's interchangeable. So that's the lie they're told. But once theory is pushed to practice, it doesn't work out that way. And you're right. I mean, they're innocent in all of this. And it's a shame that they have to go through that, in my opinion. I mean, it's not anything that, that I would want for myself or for my children, to be sure. But, Dwayne, thank you so much for the call from up there in New York. Stay warm. I would imagine it's at least as cold as it is here up there.
Yes.
And thanks again for your support, Dwayne. And with that, again, ladies and gentlemen, the phone lines are open here in the Political Cesspool. Make yourself a star of the show tonight by calling in and sharing some time with us as we approach this Christmas season. 1-866-986-NEWS. 1-866-986-NEWS. We're waiting and standing by for your calls. Winston, I mentioned that Christmas is forthcoming, and let's stress the word once again with italics and emboldened, underlined, Christmas. It's not the holidays, but the New York Times didn't seem to get the memo, and so they were offering a holiday gift guide for colored people. Now, these are their words, not mine. I'm not making this up. The New York Times is reaching out to minorities in a big way this year, and you would know this too, ladies and gentlemen, if you read our blog at thepoliticalcesspool.org, because we documented this there. The New York Times has just published the 2009 Holiday Gift Guide. It has different categories such as bookworms, foodies, techies, and colored people, or as they put it, gifts created for and by people of color. So if you've been wondering what to get the colored person in your life for Hanukkah, Ramadan, Kwanzaa, or Christmas this year, look no further. The New York Times Colored Gift Guide has some wonderful suggestions. For instance, Winston, there's the Mix Master Music Chair, which teaches the shorties how to be their own rap DJ, or perhaps you would like the Mocha Manual to Military Life, a book written for colored wives and girlfriends of military personnel. You can also get someone their very own Wise Latina shirt, too. And if you're looking for a more practical gift, how about a travel kit for kinky hair? All offered to you courtesy of the New York Times and their Gifts Created For and by People of Color section. Winston, where's our section of the New York Times Holiday Gift Guide?
I don't think I would want a section like that for us in the New York Times, because they would probably be selling cyanide or some other, you know, nooses for suicide, bags and carbon monoxide. That's what they would sell to white people, and there'd be a lot of white people buying it. We're pretty much doing it culturally and racially. We might as well do it physically. No, I think we're better off not having a section like that in the New York Times, but it does bring up some questions about segregation, because that's what they've done. They've established segregation. They have a segregated section of gifts.
Yeah, but, you know, it's all well and good when they self-segregate, but when we try, you know, we have to be rounded up at the point of a bayonet and taught how evil we are, not because we want to oppress or lord over anyone else, simply because we would rather choose to be perhaps with people who share our traditions, cultures, and heroes. That's it.
Well, you're absolutely right.
That's all we want, but it's not good enough for us, but it's all well and fine for everyone else. And, of course, that's something we've talked about a million and one times. We want to hear your thoughts on it, this and other matters. 1-866-986-NEWS. 1-866-986-NEWS. In just a minute, I don't know if we have enough time before the next segment, but I have found two stories in the very same Newsweek that contradict each other so astoundingly that it might even raise the eyebrows of the loyal Political Cesspool listening audience. And you have heard a lot of hypocritical double standards coming from the mainstream media. But I've got something for you that in reading them side by side, it even made me do a slight double take, and I've seen a lot. We're going to get to that and some more of your calls when we return tonight on the Political Cesspool radio program. Don't forget to support the network that carries the Political Cesspool. That is Liberty News Radio. You can support our support by going to libertynewsradio.com. And, of course, if you want a real good gift for Christmas, don't forget to buy or order or donate. With your donation, you'll get it. The Political Cesspool's brand new booklet, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. It's available to you and our listening audience between now and Christmas Day if you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation before December 25th. We will send that to you, signed, hand-signed by each member of the Political Cesspool hosting staff, myself, Winston, Keith, Eddie, and Bill. So go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a copy for your own today. Obtain your copy. We'll be back right after this. Don't go anywhere. The Political Cesspool continues after these words from our sponsors.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the Political Cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta
get out of this place. That's the number, ladies and gentlemen. It's somewhat of a special night in the Cesspool in so much as we are dedicating 2 hours once again to open mic. We try to do this once in a blue moon. We are rather greedy and jealously guard our airtime. No, I'm just kidding. But we do love to hear from you. That's the truth. We don't open up the phone lines as much as perhaps we should, but when we do, we appreciate those who take advantage of it. And with that, I say again, make yourself a star tonight by taking advantage of this opportunity to call into the Political Cesspool and share your opinion. Sound off on any issue that you would like. As we bounce around coast to coast, the phone lines are beginning to fill up. But if you call now, we will be sure to work you in before the end of the program. A little later on. So that number, 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-NEWS. What do you want to talk about? And let's go back to the phones and go to Todd in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Todd, you're on the air.
Hi, James. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A little cold, but I can't complain too much.
It's probably colder up here.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. You know, the 30 degrees it is here in Memphis tonight is probably like a summer's day to Pennsylvania and New York.
Yes, yes. I read an article recently. It was in the Occidental Quarterly, I believe, and it referenced something that Norman Podhoretz wrote. I think he's a Jewish individual who's very high up in the neoconservative movement, and Norman stated that Jewish money is the financial engine of the radical left, and he stated it as if it was self-evident. And I think Kevin McDonald commented on that. You know, there are individuals. I think there was a gentleman. He was a Jewish gentleman. He gave $100 million to the Sierra Club, with the understanding that they would never go against immigration into the United States. And that kind of neutered their position because overpopulation is one of the biggest issues that an organization like the Sierra Club should be on top of, and you know, if you want to save the environment. But that's an example. My question is, are there any individuals, any white individuals that you know of that could be a catalyst for taking on, you know, white advocacy and financing that for our benefit, someone of a stature that could withstand assaults by the Southern Poverty Law Center or the ADL? And if there aren't any such individuals, could some be identified and perhaps asked or coaxed to maybe take up that cause?
Yeah, very, very good points and question, Todd. And let me try to go through them one by one. First of all, I guess it was very kind of Mr. Podhoretz to announce the obvious. I suppose I could make a declaration that the sky is blue, but I don't know how noteworthy it would be. I think it's pretty common knowledge that Jewish money finances the radical left and the neoconservative right, which is only less mildly radical leftism as far as the truth is concerned. It's just a fact, and that's not an anti-Semitic screed or anything like that. This is just obvious common knowledge, and the people, the Jewish individuals who donate to these causes admit it, as Mr. Podhoretz has done. There are very wealthy people who are paleoconservatives, but they just don't invest their money. I don't know. I mean, they do to an extent, but a lot of times it's done in vain, and the efforts that they are subsidizing don't get off the ground and carry as much traction as some of these radical leftist organizations do. I would dare to reason that true paleoconservatives who are multimillionaires are much fewer and far between than the leftists. And, of course, people who are conservatives, many of them fall into the trap of believing that the Republican Party represents their interests. So you have a lot of big wheels, big spenders there donating to Republican causes rather than conservative causes. And so that's a problem. But they are out there. I've met a few of them. We very rarely get generous contributions to this radio program. I mean, every contribution we receive is very generous, whether it's $1, $10, or $100. But this program exists based upon the support coming in from individuals who send checks almost always under $100. And with that, we were able to do everything that we've done, which I think is quite a bit. So if we had more money, if Liberty News Radio had more money, if the Council of Conservative Citizens had more money, would we be able to do much more? Absolutely. But the key is getting the people who have money to quit supporting the GOP, quit giving the maximum allowable to these phony Republican candidates, and give it to organizations and entities that are really providing some positive fruit. And there needs to be done more, Todd, to encourage these benefactors to step forward and do something, because our very survival is at stake here. I mean, this isn't a game that we're engaged in. This isn't a hobby. Maybe it is right to some of the people. Maybe it is to the social revolutionaries who are playing a game with America, trying to transform it into some Marxist utopia. But to us, it's about our very survival. So I think that the people who are well-funded and who have been blessed with you know, more solid financial foundation than we are, I think they should donate. But reaching out to them and convincing them to do so.
Even half the amount that was given to the Sierra Club, even half that amount, if it was like focused on a very narrow issue like affirmative action, that I think could easily be argued should be dismantled now that we have a black president. It's axiomatic, I suppose, that racism has been defeated if you elected a black president. These are the kind of issues that, you know, if you're a true conservative, you know, you'd want to fund something like that, maybe to appeal to the masses, and it doesn't have to necessarily appeal straight to their racial interest, although it's implicit and not explicit. But, you know, if you start off on the implicit issues like affirmative action, and you get some funding for those causes and they gain steam, then maybe eventually you can get into the more of the explicit issues once you get a national following. Sometimes you have to take some lessons from the Jews and how they've gotten their power. They're very intelligent people. Take some plays out of their playbook and try to use it for your advantage.
No,
too.
Listen, to close up this call, Todd, you're exactly right, and Keith Alexander has said that in so many words time and time again on this program. The Bolsheviks, the Marxists, the radical leftists have left us a perfect playbook. All we have to do is steal it and follow it page by page. What they have done here is nothing short of miraculous, but it's not a miracle at all once you kind of dive into the tactics that were employed. They were very sensible. What it took was a great determination, a lot of money, and a willingness to stick through it over the decades until it became implemented ironclad, and certainly now it has been. Take a look at what America looked like in the early 50s. How hard would it have been, how discouraging would it have been for radical leftists to come in here and transform it into the America we see today? It had to look like it was an impossible task, but they did it. And how did they do it? Well, it's pretty easy to see. We could go through it. We don't have the time, but, I mean, that's the topic for another show. Maybe Keith and I will talk about that next week, how they transformed America from what it looked like in the mid-50s to here as we march into 2010, step by step what they did. But what one man can do, another can do. They did it. We can reverse those trends, but we need money.
Yep.
We need our people to be more generous as the leftists have been generous. And we need our people to stick together. We'll splinter off if we disagree on one point out of 100, whereas they don't. They stick together. I mean, they stick together tight as glue. And we can learn some things by mimicking their tactics. Well, Todd, thanks so much for the call and for the insightful comments. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, James.
Yeah, go ahead, Winston.
I'd like to offer a couple of comments on that. He mentioned the two most nefarious and scum-filled organizations in America today, the PLC and the EL. And, you know, they are very successful at what they do. And what have they done? Well, they have pretty much institutionalized hatred and ignorance. And that's their stock and trade, hatred and ignorance. They are the purveyors of it. And they have got so many people deluded enough to think that any opposition to, say, the ADL is automatically anti-Semitism. And nobody wants to be labeled an anti-Semite because, you know, that's a direct route to losing your business. That's a direct route to getting fired from a job. That's a direct route to, possible jail time. It's a very difficult task to overcome, or it's a very difficult task to carry out in defeating that kind of hatred and ignorance. But it has to start somewhere. Otherwise, there will be nobody left to be effective at all. And, James, as you say frequently, you know, support this program. Support European Americans United. Support the Council of Conservative Citizens. An organization and support it. We're not going to find a wealthy benefactor anytime soon because of the fear and ignorance foisted upon the country by the ADL and the SPLC.
Winston, hold that thought. I'm going to let you pick it up right there when we return. We got to take a break, and we're going to go to more of the calls on the phones right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We got to get out of this place. If it's the last thing we ever do, we got to get out of this place. Girl, there's a better
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Winston, I was just informed by our engineer that our calling capacity has reached its limit. We can't take any more callers until we sift through some that are already on the line. So that being said, I want to toss it back over to you to finish your point from the previous call we received from Pennsylvania, and then we got to get down to business.
Oh, I pretty much finished it. I say we hit those phones.
All right, let's hit the phones then. Let's go to Arkansas. Brian in Arkansas. Brian, you're on the political cesspool. How are you, my friend?
Hey, I'm doing good, James.
Good to hear from you, and glad to hear you're doing good. What can we do for you this evening?
Well, first of all, I was going to tell you that I was going to drop you a letter in the mail probably Monday. I was going to send you a $100 donation tomorrow or Monday.
Well, God bless you, Brian. See, Winston, we just need to do a telethon. That's what we need to do. No, Brian, I really appreciate it, and I know you've supported us in the past, and it never goes unnoticed. And I mean that in all sincerity. To the ADL, $100 is a lot of money to me, and I try to donate to our program each and every month as well. I don't want to ask anyone to do something I'm not willing to do myself. So in addition to hosting this program, I always try to make a donation with a little money I've got. But Brian, seriously, that means the world. That's what keeps us on the air, and whatever good we're doing, it's enabled by men like yourself. But so thank you again.
Just to keep talking it up, keep talking about the things that the problems, you know, that we've got in the country. That's the main thing. I want to help support that. I've got a quick story.
Yeah, go ahead, by all means.
Well, I was at work, and one of the rumors flying around, one of the guys, older employee, came in to work, and it's a break room, a large break room, a lot of people, and we work in pairs, and he came in to his counterpart, and it's a black guy, and this is an older white guy, 30 years senior, and he says, something to the effect of, hey, what's going on there, monkey butt? And what are we doing today? You know, in jest.
Yeah.
Well, the guy flew all over, and the older guy about lost his career. I mean, just about ended his career that day.
I hear stories like that, get emails about stuff like that all the time, things that are said in jest, things that should be taken.
Well, this is not the worst part of it. I was working with the young black fella 2 days ago, and we're down in Texas riding in a van. The van driver's a black girl, and they're pretty much just slamming each other and, you know, kidding around. And the girl says something to the effect of, well, what are you laughing at, you old monkey-looking ASS? And I'm going, oh, of course. And, you know, of course, he fires right back with the exact same cut down. And I'm thinking, man, you know, this friend of mine just about lost his job after 30 years of seniority by saying something that wasn't near as bad as that.
Yeah. And, well, no, listen, Brian, you know as well as I do, two separate books of rules exist. There's things they can say to one another and things that we can't say to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, but the whole thing about it is, so what? I mean, so what? You say something in jest with a worker you're on good terms with. This is, again, Winston, I think the sense of entitlement that has been instilled with them, this cult of victimology, everything, they are looking for excuses to go and cause us think about. I mean,
well,
minorities in this
rumor,
country.
You know, James, the rumor is going around that the boy probably got a pretty good little check out of it.
Well, oh, yeah, well, no doubt about it. They'll get some sort of settlement or reparations, if I can use the word, or they'll get some sort of...
This is a Fortune 500 company. You can bet he got paid.
Oh, absolutely. Well, this is the thing. This is what's been instilled, unfortunately, in their minds, is that they have been so conditioned to believe that evil white racism exists in every corner mm-hmm. of the American fabric that they're so hypersensitive.
Mm-hmm.
That when they're not
when
a good-natured joke
about it, though, you know,
they've also been trained to understand that not only are they going to be looking for it at all times, when even the most vague semblance of a transgression would manifest itself, that they can get a big payday out of it, and oftentimes mm-hmm. they do. So they're taught to be, they're taught that everyone's out to get them, and they also know that when they find an example of this so-called racism, they can cash in on it, and that's a terrible way for this country to operate. It's a terrible, it's bad for everyone. It teaches them no self-reliance, and it once again makes us the victims of a tyrannical political correctness. Winston, I'm sure you've got thoughts on this.
Oh, I do. But the main thing that this proves to us, James, is that, you know, in a simple way to say it, is there's no living with them. Why would we subject ourselves to the possibility of being called racist? What is the incentive? I know a lot of white people like to try to associate with Negroes just to prove they're not racist, but, you know, black people don't accept that premise from the beginning. If you're white, you're automatically a racist, and it's just a matter of them being able to synthesize an instance of it, so that there's just no living with them, and it wasn't us who created that situation, it was them. James, you wrote on your blog about that silly license plate issue, where this Negress saw a license plate and saw racism in it, and the guy, Department of Public Safety, rescinded the license. And the guy apologized for offending this black woman, even though the license plate had nothing whatsoever to do with racism. It referred to his motorcycle. But because a black woman saw racism, well, that's good enough. It was there.
Yeah, and this is what I'm talking about. And this, listen, if someone is, you know, committing an act of violence or some act of terrorism on someone just on the basis of their ethnicity, then obviously there are laws there to deal with them. If someone, you know, murders or robs or rapes or does any of these things, the laws that are there are good enough. The punishments there are steep enough. They are trying to add another layer of laws that only victimizes white people and only entitles everyone else, and this is what we've got into with this cult of racism, and again, the definition of racism changes each day of the week, and everything becomes a little more racist.
Hey, James,
yeah,
I have one final thought on that, or one more thought on that. I remember when it was one of the presidential campaigns in which W. Bush was running, and he was at a town hall type meeting, and some black woman, I think it was, asked him why he refused to add hate crimes charges to the men who dragged James Byrd to death. And he said, he handled it very well, for once. He said, well, they got the death penalty. What was the point in adding hate crimes to it? It would not have added anything to it. I wish he had gone further and said that, hate crimes laws are biased anyhow. They create hatred. They foment ignorance. But you know, they want this extra layer, as you said, when it will do nothing to help the situation.
Yeah, Winston, you basically articulated my thought much better than I did. That's the point I'm getting at. There are already laws on the books that are going to deal with these people, I think, correctly. You know, if someone is motivated to go out and do an act of violence on someone just because they're black or whatever, or in most cases, and in fact, 99 times out of 100, the other way around, then you know, there are laws on the book against these things. But this so-called hate crimes nonsense, it's only made to further punish our people. Brian, thank you so much for the call and for your support. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yes, sir. Okay, thank you, James.
We have got very little time left in this hour. I tell you, when we do these open mic shows, it goes by so quickly, does it not, Winston? I mean, this is the joy of it all.
Well, I keep telling you, we got to do it more often, but
you never
listen to me.
Yes, you do. And we're doing it tonight. We've got lots of callers on the line. We're going to try. How much time do we have left, Denny, before the end of the hour? I know we don't have much. A minute 43. Let's see if Clint from we're going to stay in Arkansas. Clint in Arkansas. Clint, can you get your thought in a minute and a half? Clint, are you with us?
Yes.
Clint, all right. We got about a minute until the break, and then we're going to pick it up in the third hour. What can we do for you tonight, sir?
Okay, I'll try. You all are doing an outstanding job, and we appreciate what you're doing. And going back to the reparations that you were talking about in the first hour.
Right.
I have four young children, and they have ancestors who came from Europe, fought in Revolutionary War, every major war, Civil War, all the way down until the present time. And, you know, the thought went through my mind when you were talking about that. In the not very distant future, my children are going to be in the minority. And when they are, I wonder if these other so-called minority groups of today are going to help them to preserve their history and have a White History Month in school and have special programs and all sorts of the different things that we're doing for them to help them to preserve their history and heritage like we have theirs.
Clint, I tell you, the answer to that, you can just ask the white farmers in South Africa how that worked for them. And that could be the way it's going to go here. If it's not that violent, we would be lucky. But at the very best, those rules won't apply to us. I don't think so is the short answer. No. If we allow this to become a third world nation, then we're going to have to pay the price that the inhabitants of a third world nation have to pay. We got to do what we can to stop it. And that's what we're trying to do on this program. Clint, thanks for the call. We're going to talk more about that in the third hour and go back to the phones when the political continues. Stay tuned, everybody.
Believe it or not, there's a third hour of tonight's installment of the Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
They call the rising sun.